Sunday, Reformation Sunday, is one of my favorites in the church year. On this day, we remember October 31st, 1517, when the rural country German priest Martin Luther posted 95 theses, or kind of theological declarations, on the door of a church in Wittenberg, Germany, catalyzing, if not commencing, what became known as the Protestant Reformation. And Luther's actions, along with those of many others, were not meant to start a new church, but rather generate reform within the church. And yet the protest of Protestant outpaced the reform of the Reformation, and here we are. From that point on, our Reformed and Presbyterian forebears advanced Luther's thinking and action, taking some things farther than Luther did, not as far as others eventually would. I know you're all struggling to figure out what you're going to wear for Halloween this coming Thursday. You can borrow my John Calvin Halloween mask if you want to. I love Reformation Sunday. I love more and more what it's become. For many decades, and some of you will remember this, it had kind of a, isn't it so great we're not Roman Catholic feel to it. And that sentiment was never, ever, ever to our credit. I'm grateful that it's largely passed. But I can't help but remember what comedian and thoughtfully devout Roman Catholic Stephen Colbert quipped one time. With the most recent papal transition, Colbert said this: the current pope is out on February 28th, but the College of Cardinals may not elect a new pope until the end of March. Do you realize, he asked, what this means? We might have an entire month with no infallible person on planet Earth. There will be no rules, it will be a Catholic free-for-all. They'll be using the Lord's name in vain, coveting my neighbor's wife, killing anybody you want. It'll be like being a Presbyterian. So it's much better than it was. We built good relationships with Roman Catholic partners. We have come to reappropriate much of what we jettisoned. On top of all that, I know there are former and semi-former and not quite former Roman Catholics in almost any Presbyterian gathering, including this morning's. So why I like Reformation Sunday now is that it allows us to remember our past legacies with gratitude, to lament and confess where they came short or missed the mark, to refresh and rehearse the values that will still matter as we move into our future. The presenting issue at the moment of Luther's protest, you will remember, was the sale of indulgences. The notion that you could purchase something, a holy thing or relic, if you could afford it, to gain salvation. But indulgences were really a sign of a deeper problem. Our inability to rely on or to trust the loving grace of a merciful God. God's grace is not for sale, nor can it be earned by word or deed or purchased. It is a gift, freely given, lavishly given, a reminder that they need, and a reminder we certainly need now. Now, sometimes I'm asked what Presbyterians believe. I like to begin my answer with the affirmation that we believe about 98% of what all Christians believe. And while the remaining 2% is important, it's rarely a deal breaker. And it's often a point of emphasis more than anything else. We put a brief paragraph from our Book of Order, the Church Constitution is in that 2%, by the way, in the middle of the bulletin, and you can find it, read it, not read it, later, halftime of the game, or something like that. But that paragraph includes the affirmation of a great theme. Reformed tradition, a faithful stewardship that shuns ostentation and seeks Thank you. in the church that prosperity takes the form of a wealthy pastor who loves mansions, lives in them, flies in private jets, wears expensive suits. And face it, these are the men we were talking about in terms of the prosperity gospel. I'm also going to like to be critical about the church practices. We have enough of our own problems, but the prosperity gospel seems wrong to me and unfaithful. It's theologically wrong. God does not want us to be wealthy. It is ecclesially wrong. Learjets are trappings of misguided church leadership. But mostly it's ethically wrong. People who can't afford it are doomed. The giving to promote a warped view of the gospel and what amounts to the modern-day version of indulgences. That's the prosperity gospel. It can be an easy target. The Pharisees can be an easy target, standing in the middle of people bragging about how great his religion is. But think of more nuanced and subtle versions of that attitude. When Jill writes, if you're being completely honest, who do you think yourself better than? When and why have you judged others? Caroline Lewis says it more candidly. If we are not found guilty in hearing this parable, we are deluding ourselves. We pray this prayer all too often with too much justification, with all kinds of explanation for such an expression of relief. Passage of those rights calls attention to those moments in our lives when we too readily judge. When we size up the other with the assumption that our faith, our spirituality is somehow better. Our security in our own future all too often turns into certainty about the other. Our sense of justification gets caught up in our own self-righteousness rather than true trust. God's love. This parable can easily be a trap, David Lowe's writes. We can so easily dismiss the Pharisees' outlandish arrogance, but might carry aspects of it within us. Or we switch quickly to the tax collector side without fully understanding that his true faithfulness was in understanding that it's always about God and not him, not us. So shunning ostentation is not as easy as it sounds. It's only a step on our path. We won't be as brazen as a Pharisee who prays how great he is, and even more so how great he is because he's not like the other. We're not ministers who fly in private jets. That was never part of the conversation I had with the PNC. But we also can't be equally brazen in our shunning of ostentation, saying, in effect, look how great we are because of how humble we are. Ours is the best humility, we might say. Because that can be a slippery slope, too. Some 4 days shy of 502 years ago. Shunning ostentation, living humbly, leads to service. And service leads us always back to God. Luther's genius, followed by Calvin's and countless other reformers, known and unknown then and now, was always an understanding that this is about God and not us. It's never about us, it's always about God. But understanding that stewardship is cultivating God's gifts. The justice is about ushering in God's vision for the world. Understanding that